Shock Buffs and Frog Lube, this week on Mail Call Mondays. I'm John McQuay with 8541 Tactical, and this is Mail Call Mondays, the show that answers your questions about precision rifles, optics, and equipment. Welcome to another Mail Call Mondays, and this Monday we are going to go a little bit more handgun oriented, and we're going to talk about two projects that I have been working on over this last week. Now, we've talked about Frog Lube before. And I've got a couple of my previous containers of Frog Lube here, and I have really given Frog Lube a run a couple of times in the past. And for those of you who are not familiar, Frog Lube is a USDA certified bio-based product. It is supposed to be a completely non-toxic food grade cleaner, lubricant, and protectant. And it comes in a variety of different formats. The one that I have here, this is the paste. This is the original Frog Lube that I gave a go. Then we have the CLP, which this bottle's kind of deformed because it has been in a range bag with a bunch of other stuff. I took some of that CLP and put it in just a Brownells needle oiler, so it's a little bit more handy. And then they have their solvent and degreaser here. And again, all of these are supposed to be non-toxic products. What I don't have up here is the little spray bottle about this size of Frog Lube Extreme, which is the stuff that we have been testing on the 1911. Now, the Frog Lube Extreme is what hooked me back into playing with Frog Lube again, because to be absolutely honest with you guys, when I find a lubricant that works, I tend to stick with it. I don't go really hunting down what the next greatest and what the next better product is. If it runs, if my guns will run fine with it, if it allows me to clean and maintain my firearms without any trouble, then there's no real reason to go look for something else. What originally attracted me to Frog Lube is that it's supposed to be non-toxic and food grade. That means if you end up with it covering your hands all the time, then you're less likely to have any kind of problems later on. It's less likely for them to figure out that it's a carcinogen later down around the corner. That, and for anyone who has been cleaning weapons for a long amount of time, at some point in time, that stuff has found its way in your mouth. Either you got it on hand and wiped your mouth, or you know, whatever. And anybody that's ever had their lips go numb from CLP before knows what I'm talking about. You know, minimizing the contact of petroleum-based products with your body is always a good thing. So I really wanted to give it a go, and our first try with it was in a 308 Ma-10, and I really started with the weapon cleaned to completely fresh, totally dry, applied the Frog Lube, got it hot, ran it through that gun, and it seemed to work fine in that gun. When we did our next Ma-10 project and we built the 6.5 Creedmoor Ma-10, I went ahead and used the exact same stuff in the exact same manner. And for some reason, and I don't know if it's some kind of electrochemical reaction or whatever, the nickel-boron bolt carrier group on that rifle would gum up with Frog Lube constantly. I would have a range session. I would shoot 100 rounds. I would wipe the gun down. I would put it in the safe. Would get it out a week later, and I would actually have to mortar the gun to get the bolt carrier group to release from the barrel extension. This was not a good thing. For some reason, it was gelling up, and I was mainly using the paste, and I was using it on the back of the bolt lugs, and then using a very light coat of it on the bolt carrier group itself. And then I would use the CLP anywhere, like on the trigger group, anywhere that the paste was more difficult to flow into those recesses. And I started to find that many users of Frog Lube had this same encounter. I just kind of put it to the wayside, didn't mess with it anymore. I still have not used it on a small frame 5.56 or 223 AR. That may be coming next. But I just kind of pushed it off to the wayside and said, all right, well, it doesn't work. Well, I had some chances to talk to Frog Lube representatives a little while back, and what kind of gave me a little bit of pause is they keep coming back to this. Frog lube does not work well with petrochemical products or petroleum-based products. So if there's any intermixing, it can cause frog lube to gel up and gum up and do all kinds of crazy stuff. So they keep going down to this. You need to make sure that your weapons are clean, totally clean, that there's no trace of petrochemicals left on them before applying frog lube. So when I built the 6.5 Creedmoor Mach 10, I was pretty sure that that was in fact the case. We were working with all new components, new upper and lower receiver. Everything was cleaned and wiped down before I put it together. The bolt carrier group was cleaned with Frog Lube's own solvent before I lubed it up for the first time. So I don't know. I don't know what was causing that, but they told me they released this Frog Lube Extreme. It's a little bit thinner. It's more like the CLP instead of the paste. So I decided to give it a go again because, again, I really want it to work. It smells great. It smells like muscle rub. Again, the fact that it's non-toxic really interests me, but it's got to work. If it causes my weapons to malfunction, then it's no good to me at all, and I might as well go back to the petroleum-based lubricants that I've been using. So when we were at TriggerCon up in Washington, I spoke with one of the Frog Lube reps. They were giving away little sample packs of Frog Lube in the goodie bags and all this stuff. So I talked to them a little bit about the problems that I was having. Again, they reiterated that you have to use their solvent and you have to clean all the petrochemical stuff off of it. Get the weapon back down to bare metal finish before you go with this stuff. So I said, all right, we'll give it a go. I wanted to pick a firearm that would definitely show me some odd behavior if the frog lube started to gel up or started to have any change in its viscosity. I also wanted to pick a gun that I could afford to clean and then throw in the safe for a couple of weeks. Because that really, if you glean the web, if you talk to other shooters, you'll notice that that seems to be one of the big problems is when you clean a firearm with frog lube and then you put it up for a matter of months. A lot of guys have brought them out and found that the frog lube gelled up and is no longer a lubricant. It turns into just a really sticky mess that then you have to clean back off the weapon. So I wanted something that I could eventually clean, throw in the safe, and then let it sit for a while. I also wanted something that I can easily break down and get completely and totally spick and span spotless with not a drop of petroleum left on it. So to that end, I went ahead and grabbed our SIG TacOps 1911 traditional here because 1911s are fairly simple to detail strip and break down into their various different components, and it's small enough that there was no problem to throw the entire gun into my ultrasonic cleaner. Now we've got one of the larger Hornady ultrasonic cleaners. It has a hot tank feature to it, so I went ahead and fired it up. Heated that thing up to 140 degrees, dropped all of the components into it, barrel slide, all the internal components, everything was detail stripped with the exception of the extractor here, which is just a bear to remove on this slide. So we took everything, threw it in the tank, let it run for a 15 or 20 minute cycle. I can't remember exactly what it was. And then pulled everything back out and took a look at it. And after we dried everything off, most of this pistol is stainless steel, so there wasn't any problems with worrying about it rusting right away. So I dried everything off, set all the components out so they could air dry as well, so I could inspect them. And the slide and the frame actually had that chalky, ugly look that when you've sucked all the oil out of a matte finished metal that it tends to get. All the small parts were dry. I actually had a couple of springs that were so dry that they were starting to get just that barest little bit of surface rust on them. So we cleaned everything off with Frog Lube Cleaner because once it came out of the ultrasonic tank, it should have been dry. I have no petroleum left on it. We use the Hornady parts cleaner with a water, so it's not an oil-based cleaner at all. So I used Frog Lube, their supplied solvent that they supplied in the goodie bag. It's not actually this one. It's the one that they specifically supplied in their goodie bag. Cleaned the thing all the way down, cleaned every part with the solvent, even though it came out of the hot tank. And then we went ahead and lubed it up with a generous amount of the new Frog Lube Extreme CLP. Once we got everything lubed up, everything put back together, the handgun smelled really nice, nice and minty. And it cycled very, very smoothly, very nicely. So no problems there whatsoever. I wiped down any excess on the outside of it, and it seemed to stay where I put it. And everything functioned through dry fire. Everything functioned just the way I would expect it. So next, I grabbed 200 rounds of Freedom Munitions 230 grain hardball ammunition. So it's not a hot load at all. Took it out to the range and burned 200 rounds through it. And when I say burn 200 rounds through it, I basically did five shot drills where I would draw, fire five shots, or I would come up from the low ready, fire five shots as rapidly as I could press the trigger and keep the shots on target. I'd then magazine change, and I was running four of these Chip McCormick Power 10 magazines, so they're 10 round magazines. So I get two runs for each magazine and then swap it out. Well, that 40 rounds as fast as I could pull the trigger and then as quick as I could reload magazines and then go through the drill again for 200 rounds, got this very hot. Hot enough that I didn't want to put it back in the inside the waistband holster. This is a Vail Solutions IWB holster that we're running. I didn't want to put it back in the holster because it was starting to become uncomfortably hot sitting in the holster. So after that session, I noticed that most of the frog lube had burned off the top of the slide. It was smoking pretty well, burning the frog lube off the interior of the handgun. The slide still cycles fairly smoothly, although I can feel a little bit of the machining mark drag now, as I cycle it. It's not overly dirty. The ammunition is not super clean. I do have a little bit of carbon fouling around the muzzle of the gun, but the light, the Enforce APL that we have on here, the front of the light is not all nastified, so that worked fairly well. It didn't emit a ton of extra smoke. But I did notice that the slide velocity started to slow down towards the end of the cycle. With these Power 10 magazines, the first couple of rounds, you are really balancing that line between functioning and not functioning with the 17-pound flat wire recoil spring that we have in here. So if the slide slows down too much on chambering that first cartridge out of the magazine, it will go slow. Even the second cartridge, you can feel the difference in the recoil impulse as the slide slows down. So we did notice after 200 rounds that it was starting to slow down, but I think we probably could have gone another 50 to 100 rounds without having to reapply any lubricant. So really, it passed all the tests right there. Now, we brought it back. I am teetering on the verge on if I want to go ahead and clean it and then put it up in the safe, or if I just want to let it sit and then take it out and burn another 200 rounds through it later this week to see how well the frog lube actually sticks around. Now, the drawback of the lighter weight CLP frog lube is it doesn't seem to stay in place as long as some of the other stuff. When I take a look at the actual slide rails inside the weapon, it doesn't look like there's a lot of lubricant left on the slide rails. There is a lot that is still seeping out around the dust cover and around the sides of the slide and frame from when we lubed it up when we assembled it. But we will see overall if the lighter weight frog lube works in this application. Now, I really have a mind to take this CLP style frog lube, the lighter stuff, and run it in AR-15, one of our high mileage training ARs, and see how well it sticks around there, because that will really begin to tell me how quickly that lube burns off and if we start to run any problems. The real problem that I have with testing it in one of our training ARs is those things will pretty much run dry. I could bring it out of the hot tank, reassemble it, and then shoot it, and they will run because they've been burned in pretty well. Everything's pretty well burnished and smoothed out in it, and they get a fairly high round count through our weekly training days with them. So I don't know that putting the frog lube on it would actually show me anything other than how hard it is to clean the baked on frog lube off at the end. So we may do that as we go on. But this is really just kind of an update as to what our experiences are with frog lube in the past and what our current experiences are with the product. I don't ever like to give a product a bad review without a follow-up and without giving them a chance to make things right and to get things squared away going forward. So what I really like to hear is what your experiences are with frog lube. When you go out and you read reviews on Amazon or read input on their website or anywhere else that the product is mentioned, you tend to see two different camps. You have the guys that say, I run it, it works great in my guns, I love the product. And then you have the guys that say, it's absolutely horrible, it gums up my guns, I hate it. And very seldom do you find anybody in between. Now, I'm in the camp that it has gummed up guns in the past. It seems to be running okay on this one right now. We'll clean it out, get some more frog lube on it, throw it back in the safe, and after I'm done doing some other things with this handgun, I will lube it up and leave it in the safe for a while and give it a long-term run and see how the frog lube lasts when it's left unmolested for a long period of time, if it's going to start gumming up the slide. Because on 1911, you definitely will be able to tell if you take it out and that product is gummed up on the slide rails when you go out to shoot it. So that's my current experience with the frog lube. Obviously, I would love to hear what your experience is with frog lube. And really, do you think that there is a place for these non-toxic food grade cleaners? Or are you fine with just using a regular petroleum product like M-Pro 7 or Hops or Break Free CLP, which has been my greatest experiences with Break Free CLP in the military? That was pretty much all we used. One final thing that I want to bring up about the frog lube that gives me a little bit of pause about the product. They are pretty straightforward with telling you that you cannot mix frog lube with petroleum-based products, that it's not designed that way. It will give you very poor results, although they don't come out and just straight away tell you that it will gel the product up or cause issues with it. They tell you it's not a good idea to mix the stuff back and forth. For me, this causes problems when you look at it from a professional standpoint. For military, it's pretty much a non-starter for the military. When you check your weapons into an armory in the military, you have no control over what the armors are going to do with those weapons. So if you check in your M16 or your M4 or your M9 or whatever it is you have issued to you, if the armors have to come through and do their regular thing and they hose the things down with petroleum-based CLP, well, if you've used a product like this, that is a problem. I would say you're probably, depending upon the unit you're in, not authorized to use this anyway. But if you did, that's a huge problem. Now, when we flip over and we go to a law enforcement application, unless the entire department has switched over to something like this, it's going to cause problems when you go through your annual armor's inspections, or if you have to clean your weapon at their cleaning station after training instead of going home and cleaning it or bringing your stuff in. And when you go through your regular annual armor's inspection, if an armor decides that he needs to lubricate your gun or does something, he's probably just going to grab whatever's on the table. It's probably not convenient for you to turn in your handgun with a bottle of whatever cleaner you're using and say, don't use oil on my gun, use this. The boar brushes that they have, the cleaning brushes, you know, whatever else that they have is probably already going to be saturated with a petrochemical like CLP, and mixing the two is going to be bad juju. So if that's not the case, if you don't ever have to turn your weapons in for an armor's inspection, then you may be able to use this just fine. If you're a trainer, if you're just an armed citizen, and your weapons never go to someone else for any kind of maintenance, then this kind of stuff is probably fine. But I think in a professional standpoint, the chance of mixing the two chemicals is really a problem, and I don't know how you would go about solving that unless your agency said that we are only going to use this. And then that kind of scares me a little bit, because if an agency says all we are going to use is frog lube, you will have that guy that will think that that's too expensive and he's not going to buy that, and he buys whatever's on sale at the local sporting goods store and then puts that on his gun, and then you have the opposite side of that problem happening. So I don't know what the right answer is. It's just kind of curious to me. Now, if there are any of you guys out there that are law enforcement that use this stuff, please comment down below. Let me know how it works for you during armorer's inspections. Do you have your armorers use the stuff that you're bringing in, or is there your department switched to a non-toxic food grade type cleaner for all of your weapons? Please let me know. Now, on the second side of things today, on the 1911, I'm going to talk about this little guy right here. This is a shock buff. Shock buffs are a product from Wilson Combat, and they are designed for 1911s, although they have for several other platforms in there. What the shock buff is a polymer shim or buffer that you place between the recoil spring guide in the 1911 to prevent the slide from hammering that guide back into the frame of your handgun. Now, it changes the recoil impulse a little bit. It does take up a little bit of space between the slide and the recoil spring guide, because it actually sits on the guide and it goes, the spring sits on top of it and the recoil spring guide sticks between it. It can work on full length guide rods if they're designed to work with the shock buffs, and a lot of the Wilson Combat products are. We set it up in this TACOPS when our recoil spring was ready for replacement. The factory recoil spring was pretty well worn out in the gun. It was causing problems not stripping rounds with the McCormick Power 10 magazines. So when I'd insert the magazine with the slide fully to the rear and I would drop the slide, it would either pick up that first round and very slowly move it into battery, or it would come to stop on the round and not actually strip it from the magazine. So I went ahead and jumped on Brownells and I ordered the Wilson Combat flat wire recoil spring. It's their 17-pound spring, their guide rod, and it came with a shock buff. And their guide rod was specifically designed, had a little shoulder on it that indexes on the shock buffs, so it holds them perfectly in place in there. Now, I really had never seen a need for shock buffs in the past. It came with the kit, so I decided to try it out. I also bought a replacement pack because these are a wear item. They will wear out and you will need to replace them. And then began to shoot the handgun with them. And so far, I have gotten less than stellar results with the shock buffs. I'm going to take a little bit and talk to you about them because, again, polling different shooters, it seems to be results are all over the board on it. Now, I did go on Wilson Combat's website, and I did pull a couple of little blurbs off of their FAQ about the shock buffs. And the first one, under their frequently asked questions, which we will leave a link in the link to all links on our website, it says, "Do I really need a shock buff?" And it's a couple of different paragraphs talking about how the shock buff works, but the primary sentence that you need to read, and that is, "Your pistol will function fine with or without a shock buff." Well, this is a yes or no type deal. The TACOPS 1911 did not come with a shock buff, so obviously it should function just fine without a shock buff. And even with the Wilson Combat flat wire spring and guide rod, it functions fine without a shock buff. With the shock buffs, brand new, it functions fine. So if I put a new shock buff in, the pistol will run 100%, no problem. Some handguns, though, and we're mainly talking 5-inch 1911s here, not commander or officer size 1911s. A full 5-inch 1911, one of the things you should be able to do with it is when you insert a new magazine, you should be able to slingshot the slide and have it go forward. Now, because we have the mic here, I'm not releasing it and letting it slam forward, I'm easing it forward. But if you were actually doing a legitimate magazine change, you would pull the slide to the rear and then release it and let it slam forward. That is generally the approved method for performing a speed reload for a basic level pistol shooter. We'll talk at a different point completely about using the slide release versus slingshotting. But on some 5-inch 1911s, shooters find that when they install the shock buffs, they are no longer able to slingshot the gun. What is basically happening is the slide is coming back and it is compressing the recoil spring and everything inside the operating assembly, and it is hard against that buff when the slide locks up. So there's no room for you to grab the slide and pull it to the rear anymore in order to release. You have to utilize the slide release to drop the slide. That is somewhat worrisome to me. That means that things are so tight in here that you can't pull the slide to the rear enough to drop that slide release and then have the slide go into battery. That means if you get some grime, some dirt, something else in there, you may have a point now where the slide will not lock back on an empty magazine. So if your handgun will not allow you to slingshot anymore with a slide buff or with a shock buff installed, I would recommend just getting rid of it right off the bat. Don't even mess with it. So your pistol will work fine with or without is really dependent upon your pistol. There are so many different 1911s out right now from various different manufacturers, from high-end to really budget basement, horribly barely functioning 1911s, that I can't really make a lot of blanket statements about them other than check it out in your gun. And if you have that problem, get rid of it. Now, the next thing that we will run into, and this, again, seems to be all over the board, is the longevity of the shock buff. And this is really why I'm talking to you here. If I put this thing in the gun and it would last 1,000, 2,000 rounds, whatever, I would consider it value added and not worry about it at all. But what I've been noticing is I am really getting maybe at maximum 300 rounds out of it, at minimum less than 100 rounds out of a shock buff. Now, again, if you go on Wilson Combat's website, on their fact, they have, when do I replace the shock buff? And the beginning of it says, a shock buff can last over 1,000 rounds before it requires replacement depending upon the caliber. But if you read further on, they say typically between 300 and 500 rounds. Now, I shoot Steel Challenge, and Steel Challenge, you are shooting, if you clean a stage, it's only 5 shots. You shoot that run 5 times, so that's 25 rounds to clean a stage, not have a single miss. And then you will usually shoot that 5 different stages, so 25 times 5, so that's 125. There are a lot of shooters out there that will miss quite a bit and have anywhere from 5 to 10 shots on every run. So if you go with the maximum there, 10 shots times 5, so that's 50 rounds per run or per stage, and 5 stages, so now you're looking at 250 rounds if you expend all your ammo for each stage. So that tells me a shock buff is going to be worn out after one match. So I don't know if I really dig that to begin with. That means you're going to have a pile of these little guys, and basically you're going to replace one every time you clean your gun. Furthermore, if you go on and you read through their FAQ, it says a good rule of thumb is to replace your pistol's shock buff every few hundred rounds or when it becomes swollen or torn. Now, this guy, I think I've got about 100 rounds through this guy, and it's done. It is smoked. In fact, it is so torn up that when we were testing the frog lube, I could fire the handgun, the slide would go back, and it would actually embed itself in the shock buff, and then I could feel it release, and then the slide would go forward and strip around and slam into battery, and then I'd fire the next round, and it would do the same thing. So the slide, or the shock buff, was actually catching the slide. And apparently, this is not a isolated event, because in the FAQ, it actually says, when a shock buff deforms after high round count or repeated pounding of heavy caliber loads, it will slow the slide travel and your pistol's slide operation will become sluggish, causing malfunctions. Now, I'm shooting Freedom Munitions 230 grain hardball. It is not hot ammo. I can tell by the recoil impulse and I can tell by how flat the pistol tracks that it is not hot ammo. Now, we haven't chronographed it. We haven't done a power factor calculation on the ammunition. But if I shoot it and then shoot plus P ammunition through it, there's a huge difference. I can definitely tell that the 230 grain hardball I'm shooting is not hot ammo, but yet it is just destroying these shock buffs. Furthermore, Wilson says, if you carry a pistol for self-defense, it should receive a new shock buff installed after your last range trip and prior to defensive carry. If you fail to maintain slash replace your buff at these recommended intervals, you should remove it prior to self-defense service use. So basically you're saying have a new buff in your gun or have no buff in your gun if you're using it for defensive use. Now, my recommendation would be if you are shooting a 1911 and you really, really are concerned with the slide pounding into the frame, then go ahead and use these guys. At worst, it's going to give you some practice clearing malfunctions. Take it out before you use your 1911 for defensive use, because if you're running a 1911 for defensive use and it needs one of these, you need to get your 1911 fixed. You should not need a shock buff in a defensive 1911. I started using them in this again because I replaced the recoil spring assembly and it came with one. I wanted to get some experience with them. I wanted to practice with it and see how well it worked overall and if it extended the longevity of my all-steel frame 1911, then that was just value added. At this point, I'm seeing it's really just becoming a pain in the butt. It's causing malfunction. It's distracting from my actual training day. So I may be about done with the shock buffs. Now, I could always fall back and say, well, it was probably operator error because I've got guys telling me that they're getting 1,000 rounds out of them, that they're still on their first shock buff and they don't have any problems with it. It's always difficult to evaluate those kinds of claims because a lot of the guys that are saying it, I have no idea what their firing schedule is. I don't know how often they're actually shooting their handguns. I don't know if it's going out and shooting 20 rounds and then going home, or if they're actually out burning hundreds of rounds in a training session and doing that routinely. So it's difficult to evaluate what other shooters are doing. I know that I have had pretty significant issues with it. Other shooters I know have not. The thing that really jumps up to me is that I'm using a Wilson Combat guide rod, a Wilson Combat spring, and a Wilson Combat shock buff all at the same time. So there are only a few things left that could really be causing issues. I will be replacing the firing pin stop in this handgun. The TACOPS has a very rounded firing pin stop. And what that does is when you have a hammer down and you go to operate the slide on the handgun, that ramp on the bottom of the firing pin stop makes it easier for the hammer to cock back. When you have a squared off firing pin stop, it makes it more difficult because you don't have that ramp for the hammer to follow. It's pivoting on the bottom of the firing pin stop instead of rolling on it. But what that does is it changes the characteristics of how the slide and the barrel unlock when you fire the handgun, and it will generally slow down the slide velocity a little bit. You still have the same amount of power from that recoil spring stripping your cartridge and putting the slide back into battery, but it slows things on the extraction and ejection side of it. So we're going to be giving that a try just to see how well it works, but the TACOPS, we had no problems with it after it ran through a very abbreviated break-in cycle when it was new. The pistol is at almost 3,500 rounds right now. And we only really started to have issues with the 10-round magazines, again, stripping those first couple of rounds. So that necessitated the recoil spring replacement. If I was running Wilson Combat 8-round magazines, I can run the factory worn-out recoil spring back in this thing, and it will function fine. Now, the Wilson Combat flat wire spring that we put in here is a 17-pound spring. Bumping up to an 18 or higher spring may cause the shock buffs to last a little bit longer. It may give me a little bit better feeding out of the Power 10 magazines, but it can run into some other issues when you start to run lower power training ammunition. Then you can run into the slide not reliably locking back. So replacing the actual recoil spring in the 1911 is kind of a tuning thing. The slide mass has a lot to do with it. What power ammunition you're shooting has a lot to do with it. So it is a tuning process, and it's not a one-size-fits-all. If you decide to go down this route, just know that you can go to Wolf Gunspring's website, and you can order a recoil spring tuning pack where they have a variety of different springs that you can put in to find which is the right one. If you have a lot of 1911s, it's good to invest in one of those packs anyway, because then you can find the right spring for a gun. You can replace that spring in the tuning pack and just keep that on the shelf. So when you get another 1911 that you need to replace the recoil spring, you can find exactly the right spring that you need and then replace only that spring. So you will have springs that you will probably never use just sitting in a pack on the shelf, but it's a great diagnostic tool since you can take that out to the range, you can run it, figure out what you need, and then go from there. So I'm not totally done with the shock buffs yet. I have a couple left in the pack. So when we get the new replacement firing pin stop in, we're going to play with that, see if that has a difference on the longevity of them. As I said, I'm going to check the spring plug and make sure that that is not contacting it, or to make sure that I don't have any sharp edges on the back of the slide, because it looks like it is cutting into the shock buff. It looks like it's almost cut all the way through. So it's just really kind of curious to me how this is working and what is exactly going on here. And that's kind of one of the cool things here, is that if this was just a defensive gun, I probably would not go to all this trouble. I probably would have tried these out and then trash canned them. But because of what we do here, relaying information to you, I kind of want to just solve this little puzzle so I can come back to you guys and let you know if it's a good product, if it's not a good product, what the limitations are, and how to get it to work in your gun. So for a little tiny piece of polymer, it really has caused a good deal of frustration. That's all that we have for this Mail Call Mondays. I know this is, for those of you that are long gunners, this may have been a little bit of a drag, but I will tell you, the frog lube thing, we have one other trial on the frog lube. I think this may be a good option for bolt rifles, since they are really not susceptible to the type of gumming that can really hinder a semi-automatic action. And I really have not gotten this stuff into a bolt gun yet and messed with it. So we may have that coming up. I may take one of our Remington Actions and clean it out really well, try to get all the traces of petroleum out of it, lube it up with frog lube, and then see how well the frog lube, especially the paste, works on bolt lugs and bolt bodies in a bolt action rifle. So you guys, look forward to that coming up. And if you do use frog lube on a bolt action rifle, I'd love to hear if you've experienced the same gumming issues or issues that I've described in your gun. So go ahead and leave that down in the comments section below. If you guys have any questions you'd like to see answered on Mail Call Mondays, or you have any comments on anything that we've covered here, you can leave them in the comments section down below or send it to us on Facebook or Twitter. If you're listening to us on your favorite podcast app, thank you. And you can send questions to us at 8541tactical@gmail.com. If you like the video, please make sure you like, share, and subscribe. And until next time, get out and shoot.